We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. That guy over there is Dan Rubenstein. I am still wearing my orange Syracuse t-shirt for those who listen to the part one.
Yeah.
Of our ACC preview, the ACC Atlantic. You know that I was wearing this proudly. It emanated a glow. Hopefully more than three wins this year. We'll find out.
Can we talk more Notre Dame? Because they're technically not in an ACC division. Can we circle back to the Irish today?
If you would like to. I am always...
No, I don't. I would not like to.
I know you don't, but I'm always at the ready if you want to talk more Notre Dame football. No, this is our ACC Coastal preview today.
True.
We did ACC Atlantic. Today is ACC Coastal. You did the deep dive of all things UNC and Pitt and Duke and Miami and Georgia Tech and whoever else I missed. And then we're going to circle back and talk about the remainder of the American.
Me. The ACC Roastal, because you can get over on all these teams. You can roast them however you
can
like.
Can you roast them?
Every team in the Coastal is vulnerable in some fashion, for sure.
Don't forget to go on out to verballers.com. Don't forget to go on out to solidverbal.com. You can find out more information about our Patreon and the tiers that we're offering. You can get these episodes a little bit in advance, which may not mean much to you now as we're talking preview. But as we get into the season, we can do those.
Yeah.
Picks a little bit earlier. We can do the recap a little bit earlier. A lot of stuff to be excited about going out to verballers.com. And then we've got our editorial content, which you can now find solidverbal.com, which we're very excited about as well. Don't forget to follow along on social media, Dan. Okay.
Yes.
ACC Roastal. Is that what we're going with?
I don't know. There's a lot of different dumb rhymes we can go with, but it is the ACC Coastal. And there are fascinating teams. There are not so fascinating teams, but I think there's a lot to talk about within the division because they just sort of send somebody new to the championship game every year. So there's a rotational element to the division that I'm kind of into.
Do you want me to play the Vin sounds for the side of the ACC?
At the top? Yeah. So as we re-explain things, because maybe somebody is decidedly a team of, I don't know, Virginia Tech or something, and didn't want to listen to part one, we have an automotive theme that you have centered around Fast and Furious sounds. I don't know them that well. I've seen two of them.
Nobody's perfect.
The first one and
nobody's
the
perfect.
Third one or something. I don't
the
know.
Good news,
nobody's perfect.
The good news is that you have multiple other movies that you can use to catch up with. At this point, we're up to like 9 or 10 movies. So
it's all about family, Ty. That's
all about family. So talk us through the four different phases of each of these preview capsules.
All right. So we're looking at last year's model, the 2020 model. We are looking at the curb appeal.
Hold on. 2020.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Don, what do you remember about your father?
Remember about your father. Okay, go ahead.
The curb appeal. Curb just appeal. Looking at this team, what jumps out?
I'm one of those boys that appreciates a fine body regardless of the make.
And by the way, that was Vin. That was Vin crushing on Gal Gadot. He plays Giselle in the movies, but continue.
Oh, I didn't know if he was like just looking at a Honda or something.
No, there was a double entendre going on there.
Of course. A traffic report, which I really wish we had gone with like Ernie Pie in the Sky on The Simpsons. Like, well, that's going to...
We can. I said we can rotate these for each conference.
That's true.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
But if you're Vin, you leave your life a quarter mile at a time. And then previews. Previews, we look ahead and talk about what's in the tank. What's the team got in the tank?
Amateurs don't use nitrous oxide. I've seen the way you drive. You got a heavy foot. You'll blow yourself to pieces.
You got a heavy foot.
What's in the tank just sort of means like, all right, what do they have and what might it mean given all of the above things in terms of final season, what we feel about it, what the record might be. That's how we're approaching it. Automotive, cars, speed, gasoline.
When I think of automotive, when I think of cars, when I think of speed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Miami, Dan.
Oh, I wanted you to go Daddy Yankee and then we could just play Gasolina all the
Gasoline.
Time.
Let's talk about
We're going
Miami.
All reggaeton for the Pac-12.
Let me start here before we even get into Miami.
Yeah.
Who is the best team on this side of the ACC? Is it North Carolina? Is it Miami? Is it somebody else?
I think it's North Carolina. I think the recruiting has gotten to the point where if you pair Sam Howell with talent as much as they do lose... I think it's North Carolina, and we can start with Miami. That's totally fine. But given where they were last year in terms of winnable games, even games they lost, and it was a tie game, I believe, at 17-all against Notre Dame. So I like the competitive nature of North Carolina, whereas by the end of the season, Miami played some not-so-competitive games. But it's a new team, new year, whatever. But I have North Carolina here. I think quarterback health is a big deal. So let's start with Miami and the issue of quarterback health. Last year, they started 7-1. If you remember that game against Louisville, that got out of hand pretty quickly. Some big plays there. They finished 1-2. They were not competitive against Clemson and North Carolina. De'Eriq King was absolutely a playmaker and an interesting, very much upgrade over what they've had these past couple years. But the offense overall was inconsistent, running the ball, finding playmakers on the outside. You know, Mike Harley emerged, which was really nice. The offensive line these past couple of years had struggles, but had moments where they turned it around a bit. And Miami has talent all over the defense. They lost the ends that they lost, of course, in the draft, highlighted by Jalen Phillips, but have guys stepping in really nicely. And I just think overall they were all over the place. But in terms of talent, in terms of ceiling and potential, Miami's in a very interesting place. So that was your 2020. The curb appeal with this team is, I still think, pretty obvious in that they return a good amount on both sides. And if De'Eriq King's ACL is in acceptable shape, they have maybe the most known high-level quantity overall because of his running ability and playmaking ability at quarterback. Now, Sam Howell's great, and DJU we expect to be great, but there's something about De'Eriq King that is undeniable. Charleston Rambo in his 14th year playing college football becomes a new weapon on the outside coming over from Oklahoma.
It's true. And
Mike Harley had some, I mentioned him previously, had some flashes. So Miami's in a pretty good place. And they have, I still think they're going to rush the passer pretty well. The rotation guys are becoming starters. And those rotation guys were pretty promising. To me, it's just a matter of offensive consistency with Miami at this point. Because they should do enough on defense to be in. They're not going to get blown out, hopefully, like they were last year late against North Carolina. And that was more a tackling and rushing attack. But they didn't give up a ton of points last year outside of that Clemson loss, which was not competitive until the North Carolina game. But they shut out Duke. They hold Virginia Tech in a weird fourth quarter game, but they hold Virginia Tech under 25 points. NC State, they gave up a bunch. They held down Virginia. So they... I don't see that as being a major issue, but no, they need to take a step forward offensively to really scare me because yeah, they weren't popping much in terms of big plays, and they should be.
So the schedule is not easy.
No. So if we go to traffic report, schedule is
tough.
Opening with maybe the number one team in the country in Alabama on a neutral site. Doesn't really matter. You could play that game in the Atlantic Ocean. You can play that game in South Beach. You can play the game anywhere in Miami. It's not going to be neutral because you're playing Alabama. It's not going to be home. Michigan State, which I don't know Michigan State all that well at this moment, but I mean, it's not Wagner.
Right.
They travel to North Carolina, and it's Miami is a letdown look ahead sandwich between Florida State and Notre Dame, I guess, for North Carolina, if that's a thing. But they also travel to Pitt, travel to Florida State, and have Virginia Tech consecutively with the Noles. So really challenging top to bottom, I would say, for Miami this year.
The over under
feel about those things. Yeah.
Well, no, I was going to pivot to the over under.
Please.
The Vegas over under is 9.5 for Miami. And yeah. I think most people at this point are betting under, which seems reasonable to me. I think I would be inclined to go under as well. I think we both agree that this is a team that has double digit win potential.
Sure.
Given the talent that they have and De'Ara King, like there's a lot to like there. And it kind of feels to me like this is, I hate to draw like an ultimatum, but there is a now or never feel to this for Manny Diaz.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, like they've recruited pretty well. They've got a quarterback of the future in Jake Garcia, but you're right.
There's a now or never feel to it. And that's unfair given circumstances last year. I think a lot of coaches will be given a mulligan as well. They should. But we spoke very recently to Bill Connolly. And Bill Connolly basically said, yeah, if you don't get it by year three, it's probably not going to happen. So I kind of committed that to memory, and when I look at Manny Diaz, that's a little bit how I feel. Like, I don't know, timing is weird, but it just feels like the pieces are there. They may not ascend to the level of Clemson, but they have a dynamic quarterback in De'Ara King. Hopefully he stays healthy. He's behind a very experienced line.
Yeah,
the schedule's brutal. It's a brutal schedule, but nonetheless, you would think if they've got that talent, if he can get organized, this would be the year to really throw some haymakers.
At this point with Alabama opening the schedule up, if Miami does better than what USC put forward in 2017, which was a 52-6 loss in that opener in Dallas, I'd say if they simply lose in non-embarrassing fashion, if Miami loses that game 38-20, okay. It's not the end of the world. And I think USC actually went to the Rose Bowl after getting murdered by Alabama. So there's no shame, whatever, if you lose to Alabama in any sort of fashion. But there are games that they just can't lose on this schedule. Like, they shouldn't lose to Florida State and Virginia Tech. They shouldn't. They shouldn't lose to Pitt. They shouldn't. They have in recent years, but they shouldn't. Given the experience at quarterback, if De'Ara King is fully healthy, offensive line, what they've added to the offense, I think we believe Rhett Lashley is pretty good and good enough to take this team from an okay-ish offense to at least pretty good.
You have been the decent. You've been the Rhett Lashley doubter.
I'm
between
a skeptic.
The two of us.
Yeah, I've never fully understood Rhett Lashley as a big impact guy, and he was with Gus forever, so maybe it was hard to determine. But Gus Malzahn has generally retained a good amount of control. Then, of course, he went to SMU and coached under Sonny Dykes, another coach who has a good amount of offensive say. So it's hard to know. So with the ceiling of De'Ara King very clearly as great, my expectation is a good offense. And if we don't see it, I don't don't feel great about Miami moving forward with Rhett Lashley.
What's your prediction?
So I think I have them at, would you say the over one was 9.5?
9.5.
I'm going to have them going over.
Wow. Okay.
I'm going to have them at 10-2. I think they lose to Bama and they lose to, I actually think the North Carolina situation, they got destroyed last year. So I'll have them losing to North Carolina. But otherwise, they should beat the rest of the teams on their schedule. Right?
That would be a big year.
Yeah. I think there is that. And look, it rests on a tendon. It's nothing I love with Miami. But I am high on them. I am high on Miami. I think the defense will take another step forward. And I think when you look across the conference in terms of quarterbacks you feel good about, I think there's nothing wrong with hanging your hat on Derek King.
So if you're going double-digit wins for Miami, mm-hmm. and you're still in the camp that North Carolina is the best team on the coastal side of the ACC, what is the difference there?
Well, it's that they're the difference between the best of Miami and the worst of Miami seems more pronounced because of Derek King's health, because of the uncertainty around the offense. I think there's more to bank on in terms of consistency with North Carolina. Like, I think the trajectory is more obvious, so they're almost the safer pick, even with as much as North Carolina lost and losing both of those backs and, you know, Brown out wide, all those guys. I feel better about the safety of North Carolina, I would say, where it's Miami's more variable.
Let's go to North Carolina then. Let's talk about Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, Carolina last year, 8-4 overall, 7-3 in conference.
Mm-hmm.
Some ups and downs that we can talk about. You know, definitely did not perform optimally in spots along the way. Gave up a lot of points in mm-hmm. spots. I'm mm-hmm. looking at you, Wake Forest. Gave up, 50 yes, some odd points.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina is in an interesting spot because they lose a lot of skill position talent, a lot, an awful lot.
Yep. Which I'm never terribly, terribly worried about with a returning quarterback. But yes, continue.
With a returning quarterback of Sam Howell's caliber, no. And that's fair. But you got to mention it. You know, they had mm-hmm. two running backs drafted into the NFL, a receiver. Like, it's not insignificant. And now, I think to still be in a position where you're over there saying they're still the best team in the Coastal, maybe it's not by a wide margin.
Right.
That's significant to me. Now, I know, and you've done the deep dive here, so clue me in on where things stand. Mack Brown has done really well from a recruiting standpoint, from a building up the defense standpoint. It should be getting better at this point.
Sure.
Is it ready for prime time now? Like, where do we come down on I almost said Miami. On North right. Carolina relative to the Miamis, relative to the other teams that are vying for that side of the conference?
It's a backloaded schedule, which is nice in terms of working in new guys. And these guys, you know, Bo Corrales and Josh Downs at receiver, who are promising. They bring over Ty Chandler from Tennessee. So the talent level still, I expect to be pretty high around Sam Howell. I expect a good line. But look, it's opening against Virginia Tech, and week one is always going to be a toss-up, but if we're talking Sam Howell versus Braxton Burmeister, I feel confident
enough.
And that's
in Blacksburg, right?
In Blacksburg, week one. And so teams improve the most to me between weeks one and two, if we're talking between any 2 weeks. So who knows? I imagine it's going to be a full loud Blacksburg and Lane Stadium. So who knows? But I still feel good about North Carolina in that sort of big spot. It's Georgia State, Virginia, rattling at Georgia Tech, Duke, Florida State, Miami. So nothing that is clearly scary until Miami. Florida State, we'll see, I suppose. But that's an ideal first 7 weeks. But not really one filled with, you have a Duke break and a Georgia State potentially break. But there's no guppies. There's no consecutive down games other than, I guess, Georgia Tech, Duke. But Georgia Tech is interesting, at least because they're on the road and there's at least some promise with Georgia Tech. I don't see that with Zook. But the back half is at Notre Dame, Wake, Pitt. You got Wofford in there, and at NC State as well. And at Notre Dame. So it's tough road-wise. It's tough consecutive games-wise, the back half. But I think the timing works out for a team working in new players on offense and working in new players around what I think is at least the most known quantity at quarterback as a pure passer within the conference. So what do I think about North Carolina then, I guess, right? Like, where do we stand? Appeal-wise, I think we've gone through it. The secondary to me is their speed. It's interesting. I think that's going to be another step forward I think that'll be a strength of the defense. It could be anywhere between 8 and 12 wins. Like, if Sam Howell is a killer and Jack Cohn is okay... This was a team that laid a full on offensive egg, pushed around by Notre Dame in the second half. Undoubtedly, they did not belong
in that game.
When you score 0 points and a half and you're playing in a, you know, the primetime game. Was that Thanksgiving week?
The Notre Dame game?
Yeah.
The 27th.
Yeah, I think it was right before Oregon State. Yeah. When all eyes are on that game and you lay that kind of second half egg, you don't belong. I think North Carolina is taking a nice step forward. But I understand with the schedule that, you know, they could be all over the place. I think they are in that 10-11 win area, but I still think you can move the ball against this Tar Heel team. That's the worrisome thing to me. If Sam Howell grows and steps into the moment, also, you know, didn't have four great quarters against A&M in the bowl game. If he meets the moment and is full on great, I think it's two consecutive top 15 classes from Mac Brown and staff. I think the depth is in a place where they become pretty scary. They were a balanced offense last year with those backs. I think Ty Chandler should be pretty good. They're going to lose. They're going to have at least 1.5, 1.5 losable game moments kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because of that defense that they're pushed around and the offense is cold and off the field. And Sam Howell just has an off week and throws a couple picks. Survivable performances. But maybe not survivable.
I worry about, and I think you made mention of this, the line is experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely experienced. The line last year did not protect Sam Howell.
Not especially well.
It didn't do a good job protecting Sam Howell. And I guess I worry that with the loss of some skill talent around him, if Moore is on his arm and that line doesn't improve, that's a problem.
Right. If he has to throw 47 times,
it's a problem.
If he has to gun North Carolina to wins, that's an issue. Yeah.
That's a real problem. I happen to agree that the defense should improve. Should improve. We saw young guys like Tony Grimes last year got a lot of playing time. I think.
Mm-hmm. But he also had the luck. I mean, he had Chaz Surratt in front of him and he's gone. Yeah.
Right. I just think that, you know, the infusion of talent that Mac Brown has been able to provide in Chapel Hill has been really impressive. And it's far exceeded what our expectations were when we heard that Mac Brown is coming out of retirement to do this thing. Like, you worried a little bit that does he still know what it takes to recruit, to attract talent, to build a program?
Mm-hmm.
He clearly has done a good job. Yep. So I'm optimistic about North Carolina. My cause for pause, though, is definitely not our pet charity. It is the fact that the skill position talent is walking out. And can they backfill that with some of the other guys that got coming in? I don't know. But
yeah, and it's also, what do they look like week to week, right? Like, they have that, they allow Virginia Tech back in that game last year in a bit of a shootout, and there was turnovers, and it, you know, they still ended up winning that game, I think, by double digits. But it threw a scare into them, and they came out so flat against Florida State, right? It's just like, are they going to throw in dud halves like we saw against Florida State in that first half where they were just stomped? So that's the issue to me. Now, that was a completely winnable game. They could have come back and won that game. But, you know, just the bouts of like giving up 40 plus to Virginia, giving up whatever they gave up to Wake Forest, like, are they able to hold down those teams to 28 points? Because then everything's winnable.
Okay. So where do we stand then on Carolina? What's in the tank? Because I am sent whereas I think with Miami, you were a little bit more settled on double digit wins. I'm detecting almost more of a range in the way that you described.
Yeah, I said 8 to 12.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I mean, I think it's pairing quarterback and defense for Miami, that I think Miami still has the higher upside defensively, whereas North Carolina still, if North Carolina can get off the field, but that's your bold, italicized, underscored if.
Yeah.
If North Carolina can do a better job getting off the field, then I feel great about double-digit North Carolina.
Okay.
Last year, North Carolina, I'm looking if you want advanced metrics, they had the number one explosive play rate in the country. It's a good place to start. They're number 62 in terms of giving up explosive plays. They were number 60 in terms of like generating three and outs, the defense.
Yeah, that's tough.
So if they get to 30, They can be a top 30 in terms of just getting off the field and letting teams get pounded by Sam Howell, Ty Chandler, whoever.
There is a little bit of an Oklahoma factor here. And by that, I mean,
sure,
we know the offense is going to be good if the defense gets marginally better.
Yeah. I also believe Oklahoma has a Tennessee running back transfer. So good analog.
Good analog. Thank you.
Yeah.
But you get my point. Marginal improvement on that side of the football. It's an entirely different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think North Carolina does have that potential. I think there's promising dudes at linebacker. I think they've gotten deeper in the secondary. It's just in practice, really, with them, because they have those dud halves.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I want to talk about Virginia Tech. I have 1,000 questions about Virginia Tech.
Oh, man. I have 4.5 answers. If anybody has the answers, please forward them to justin.fuente at vt.edu.
There are a couple different ways that you could frame this out.
Okay.
I think the bigger question for me about Virginia Tech is, like, where the hell's the program? Where is the program headed? Mm-hmm. It feels a lot like it's stalled out. And again, you've done the deep research project here on Virginia Tech, and maybe you can pull me out of that ditch. I can't get past Braxton Burmeister as the starting quarterback. Hendon Hooker's gone. Where'd he go? Tennessee?
Mm-hmm. So everybody's leaving and entering Tennessee.
He's out of there. We had Fuente on the show way back when. We loved him.
Mm-hmm.
He gave all the right answers, as many of the coaches do. They all have media training.
The all-important solid verbal appearance.
You got to nail it. But we loved him after talking to him.
Yeah, he was good.
He wanted to be in Blacksburg. Remember, he took over for a legend. Tough spot to be in, but they went out, they got him, they brought him over. He was excited about the opportunity.
Sure.
Why does it feel like it's stalled? Is anything being done to try and rectify that and get some more forward momentum?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've already discussed two teams on this side of the conference in Miami and North Carolina who have, I think, a lot more to be excited about. Tech was typically in that spot for however many years with Virginia Tech. Tech against Clemson. Yep. Where are we at now?
The program where you couldn't mess around against Virginia Tech or you just lose.
No, you couldn't. You did anyone want to go on the road to Blacksburg? No.
No, and not an 11-win annual program, but you had to have your act together. You're just going to lose. They recruited well enough, especially later on under Frank the Tank. And Bud Foster was automatic in terms of churning out, pretty much automatic in terms of churning out NFL caliber players on all three levels. And it's just when you have a program that is so deeply wound around a staff and a head coach for so long, you know, it's tough to sort of put your own footprint on things, especially if you can't find, keep, and develop quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's, I mean, Hendon Hooker has showed a lot of promise. He leaves. Obviously, there were some headbutting there, and we thought he was going to come back from injury sooner than he did. Obviously, not privy to that information. So here we are. Here we are with Virginia Tech. They lost close competitive games in 2020, drilled by Clemson, won the Commonwealth Cup in a very strange, awkward game. I guess the statement win was the big win over Boston College. And the good was they had a really nice big play offense because it was because of Khalil Albal, Herbert. They ran the hell out of the ball. He was electric and exciting and quite fun. And the best of Hendon Hooker was quite good. There was some inconsistencies there. But situationally, you know, red zone against the blitz, like they had flaws. They had those Achilles heels, and that ultimately helped the season to unwind at certain points because of it. And so they, you know, they allow 50 plus to North Carolina. They ice themselves against Liberty. I mean, they gave up 38 in that game, but they iced themselves at the end of that game. So not an amazing look. They gave up 47 to Pitt. Do you know how hard it is to give up 47 points?
It's not easy.
To the modern Pitt offense, the Mark Whipple Pitt offense.
Right.
It's tough. So not just other than Khalil Herbert, there wasn't a lot to say like this is who Virginia Tech is successfully last year. Braxton Burmeister did make some plays against some of the better teams, but it was very clear in rewatching some of Virginia Tech that it was, you know, some coverage busts, some like very specific, and this is a good thing, plays that were scripted so that like, okay, we're going to have a tight end leak out late and he should be open. So they're generating these open looks. But in terms of Braxton Burmeister, you know, even in play action, stepping into the pocket and just nailing somebody on a timing route, you know, 24 yards down the field, there wasn't a lot of that.
Yeah.
So that's worrisome to me that he might be okay and he's athletic enough to extend plays, but he's not a 9-win quarterback to me. 9-10-win quarterback.
Like, what are they? What is Tech?
That's a good question.
Because at least with Hendon Hooker, you kind of...
Yeah.
Got some sense of what this team, what the philosophy was of the offense. But
right.
Between him leaving, between there being new leadership now on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, as of last year.
Like, I don't know what they are. And that's, my problem with Virginia Tech football.
It's a wing and a prayer. It's hope about Braxton Burmeister. There's experience in that wide receiver room. And I think there's some competence in that front seven.
Yeah.
Not amazing, but there's competence. There's appeal there, but that's not, you know, that's not a poster. Front seven competence does not sell season tickets. And it is a pretty good schedule for Virginia Tech. It's North Carolina. This is your traffic report to open the season, as we mentioned. That's at West Virginia, which is nice that those two teams are playing. They miss Clemson. Notre Dame game is at home. And they have one road game before Halloween.
Really?
So, yeah, they start out extremely Blacksburgian. And they finish with 4 out of 5 on the road.
Wow.
And also that finish is at Miami and at Virginia in the Commonwealth Cup. So,
okay.
Yeah, a sort of tale of two seasons in terms of where they play and how difficult that schedule looks.
The over-under is 7. And it looks like most folks are hitting the under.
Yeah, 6-6 feels about right. Just because, and this is what I mentioned, I think, on part one of the ACC and American preview. It's if you're not going to be a great team, do something great. Run the hell out of the ball. You know, have a lockdown pass defense or rush the passer super well or have linebackers who go sideline to sideline or mash teams up front and run the ball and sort of control things. And with Virginia Tech, it's like they may do 2.5 things okay.
Yeah.
So... It's free of an identity. There's nothing that strikes me as exciting about Virginia Tech football, which is why their AD held a press conference to say, we're not firing Justin Fuente. Why am I holding a press conference? It got to the point where I need to hold a press conference to say we're not doing something.
If they go 6-6, though, he's got to be gone, right?
I assume. I don't know what his buyout is, but I assume that conversation becomes very real.
Six and six. and again, we don't root for this stuff, but 6-6 to no. me, that's, there's no forward momentum there.
No, and they did, I mean, they ran the ball well enough where they, I don't know, you can probably look this up as I'm talking, like top 20, top 25 type national offense. Like they're at a good starting point. That's a different quarterback largely,
yeah.
A different running back. And I don't know. It's, I think it's Raheem Blackshear, the Rutgers transfer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Khalil Herbert was awesome. Almost 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns. You're right about their rushing success rate. It was a top 20 rushing team. So they're very efficient on the ground. Not much as a power rushing team.
No, he was a home run dude. He was great. He really he took the team on his back at times.
But some big plays, like it wasn't all bad. I don't mean to imply otherwise. Mm-hmm. It just, where is it going is kind of the question. That's where I'm at with Virginia Tech.
Yeah. It'd just be nice to know in advance what to be excited about.
Maybe. So just reiterate, you over under is 7. Where do you go? 6-6?
Yeah. I mean, so here, like if you look at the teams on their schedule where you're just like, okay, I feel pretty good, or where they're playing those games, you know, Notre Dame, I think the trajectory of West Virginia is interesting. North Carolina, on the road against Miami, even playing Virginia on the road. I don't know.
There's not a lot there that you feel great about.
No, but also like this is not a conference that has those emerging units, as I like to say,
emerging
on a recent show. Yeah. Where do you want to go next?
Speaking of emerging units.
Who are you pretty excited about? Who arouses your college football brain?
Georgia Tech.
Interesting. Okay.
Georgia Tech.
I don't know if I agree with you, but yeah.
Well, I don't know if I agree with me either. I'm not necessarily saying that I think Georgia Tech's going to take a jump up, but I know their coach is real high on Atlanta. He's been selling Atlanta hard since he got there.
Smart.
He is also trying to reconstitute the program after the Paul Johnson option era, which is not easy. It takes a while to dig out from that.
Yeah.
And it feels as if
now
it feels as if Tech is giving him enough wiggle room to do just that. So much the same way I was asking the question about where is Virginia Tech headed, I get the sense that there is some more forward momentum in Atlanta and that the Jeff Sims, Jahmyr Gibbs thing is something to build around.
Yeah.
What I don't know and what I hope you can tell me is, will there be more wins this year? Because 3-7 last year, there weren't a lot of wins. Will there be more wins that we can build this thing around?
They showed some fight against Boston College, but you're coming off of a season losing to Syracuse. Man, I don't know. I mean, look, they scored a ton of points against Duke, but that, I mean, fine, good, you should. And then the defense looked pretty good against NC State, but, you know, giving up what they did against Pitt. Like, there's defensively, let's start here.
Just
defensively, it was a relative strength of theirs last year compared to the depths at times they fell to offensively. And that's with starting a freshman quarterback in Jeff Sims, a highly touted one who I think some people thought he was going to go to Florida State. You know, I'm on the record as thinking Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the more interesting, fascinating, promising running backs nationally. Just the way he moves,
his
athleticism and his ability out of the backfield. I really like him. Other than that, the curb appeal of Georgia Tech is much more big picture. It's, okay, here's Jeff Collins's track record with improving, developing defenses. Here is where Georgia Tech is located. They're recruiting Metro Atlanta. I mean, they've widened the net more than that, but they're starting at a pretty decent place in that the backfield is defined, Jeff Collins is defined geographically. That's a good definition to have. It's still an upwards battle. Georgia Tech is not necessarily a cool place to go in the Southeast. It's an academics-driven institution that played a very, very, very well-defined brand of football successfully for a long time, and they've gone away from that. So there's a lot in terms of branding and recruiting that, you know, it still needs help with, especially as the rest of the ACC, or not the rest, but teams in the ACC are just farther along.
They're farther along.
Mm-hmm.
The elephant in the room, though, is the schedule.
It's friggin' rough, man.
The schedule is, that's the curb appeal.
Yeah.
And it's like
the curb appeal is the schedule, just that you're looking at a car accident.
Well, I'm not a sadist, but I'm saying it's the curb appeal is that if you're a Georgia Tech fan, you at least get to see them play good teams. And because they play Notre Dame, they play Georgia, they play
Clemson early.
Clemson, they play Miami. Like they play some real heavy hitters here.
Dude, you're naming names, but this is consecutively Georgia Tech at Virginia, Virginia Tech at Miami, Boston College at Notre Dame, Georgia with no buys.
That's impossible.
Between.
It's impossible. That's an impossible situation. But my point is this.
Mm-hmm.
They could lose all those games. I don't know.
Yeah.
They probably could in real life.
Sure. In real life.
And that will mask any positive movement here.
Buddy, they could lose to Kennesaw. I don't know.
It will mask any of the good stuff because the wins won't be there. There's just nowhere to find them. I can't find them on there. Can you?
I see four. Like, yeah. NIU, Kennesaw, Duke, and one of the Virginia schools. I don't know.
They have
Virginia off of a bye.
The over-under is five.
Yeah. I mean, they have BC at home. So there's your fifth. If, you know, situationally, I mean, that's a letdown look ahead, by the way, a winnable BC game. And it's not all that winnable, to be clear, but it's Boston College after Virginia Tech and before Florida State. So I don't know. Yeah. It's a sandwich for BC as well. But yeah, I don't look, you should judge Georgia Tech based on their record. But after that, you should judge them based on the clear improvement seen. Losing games by single digits. Jeff Sims looking a lot more comfortable throwing fewer interceptions.
Okay.
Looking more creative on offense, tackling better on defense. You know, those kinds of things. So the abstract, and then just like margin of loss and who they beat. So if they're losing, it's just sort of embarrassment, right, at this point? Because that's proof of trajectory and improvement to me.
Okay.
Who do you want to go to next?
What a tough schedule.
After that bummer.
That is comical.
It is. It is. It is a bummer because I think ceiling-wise, if they're able to keep building on defense and Jeff Sims is able to take another step forward, they become interesting.
Kenny Pickett is back this year.
Of course he is.
For what feels like his 19th year.
He's been their quarterback since 2012.
There's a definitive John Stocko complex here where Kenny Pickett mm-hmm. will always be the Pitt quarterback henceforth. Inconsistent last year.
Yeah, to say the least. Couldn't
I feel like
ball at all.
Every time I do a Pitt preview, every time I look at Pitt, try to collect my thoughts around Pitt, it's the same team. Been the same team for what feels like an eternity now.
And they're always... yes and no, but continue.
They always feel like they're on the cusp of 8 wins, 9 wins. But it could also go terribly and they finish with 4.
Right.
Where are we at this year?
Yeah, it's sort of like the defense has been inconsistent, but when the defense is fine, there's a little bit of Will Muschamp to it. Like when the defense is fine, the offense takes a step back. When the offense has, was it Kadri Allison and Darren Hall both go over 1,000 yards a couple years ago, then they're, you know, everything else kind of falls apart at times, or they're just inconsistent. Like why are you not running the ball more with this duo who is incredible and both averaging 6 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards a carry.
Right.
So yeah, there's that element, just like the putting it all together. So you're right. They were largely inconsistent last year on offense. The defense was pretty good. And that's without Jalen Twyman, who opted out. Dez Alexander he's the appeal as well. It's what they're able to do up front on defense. They couldn't run the ball. They were inconsistent. They get absolutely shellacked. They go down like 31-0 to Clemson, just embarrassed. But I guess are a little bit more respectable from there. It was a really great pass rush last year. They got after the quarterback. They're like that. Pitt is at least that school that you're like, well, if you're not going to be a complete team, be a something team up front. Really, really challenging to deal with Pitt. Absolutely challenging week in, week out. So that's at least good. And then on offense, I guess the promise of continued improvement and production from Jordan Addison, who was one of the great freshman receivers nationally in college football last year, that he was, you know, even knowing that they didn't have a ton of options out wide, he was able to get loose. And so that's at least nice to have that piece. Like if Jordan Addison could get to South Bend, that'd be amazing. Like that's the answer here. But yeah, that's Pitt's offense. Kenny Pickett was, he's fine. You know, he had a couple big games, but is never going to be, to me, a 10-win Pitt quarterback. He's never going to be the anchor point of a special lightning in a bottle Pitt season. And that's fine. He's fine. He's like, he's, you know, sort of scrappy, makes plays, extends plays. It's a good starting point. It's just not a great starting point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I still think the appeal is the defense. Also, they brought in Brennan Marion, who is sort of a unique offensive mind. He had a lot of success as an offensive coordinator on the FCS level, was the receivers coach at Hawaii, I believe, last year, is the new receivers coach at Pitt. So maybe that offense is getting a little bit more creative. He has, you know, experienced Cam Newton, Kalen Newton, all those guys with a very specific sort of option passing look. I don't know.
So that's
the appeal to me.
As I look at the Pitt schedule, because Pitt is a team that has some recent history with a team like a Clemson, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I look at the schedule,
by the way, it's the go-go offense.
The go-go Brandon offense.
Marion. Yeah. Sorry. Continue.
It looks like Pitt has Clemson at home, and it's a week before Clemson
plays Florida State.
Yes. So is there a look ahead potential there?
I mean, it's all Mackenzie Milton on that point. Yeah. Yeah. I guess maybe, but I just don't think Pitt has the horses to really hang with, especially after last year, which was a very strange opening to that game. It's not a murderous schedule, though.
No.
It's at Tennessee, which is Goodyear to get Tennessee. Most years now are Goodyear to get Tennessee. All apologies to Vol fans. They're home against Clemson and Miami in consecutive weeks. I would say at this point, look at the other schedule. If you have it in front of you.
I have it, yeah.
A 6-0 start is not silly.
UMass, right? Tennessee, Western Michigan, New Hampshire, and Tech. And then
Western Michigan's tough. I like Western Michigan's offense a lot, but still.
6-0.
In terms of the Pitt defense, yeah.
You can come up with 6-0. Clemson and Miami, let's just assume losses.
2-4 finish, a 3-3 finish is about right.
Yeah. Okay.
So I have them 8-9 wins. So if I had to say definitively, I think they're 8-4-ish. I think they can bump up right against 8-4-9-3. Promising skill guys on offense and a nice bounce back year on the recruiting trail for Pitt, by the way, could offer some nice depth. And yeah, it's more about, you know, if they have injury luck and things bounce their way late in games, they're a 9-3 team to me.
The line from about a month ago now, and I'm assuming this hasn't gone
don't
up
love
or down
Whipple,
too
by
much.
The way. I don't love Whipple.
We've talked about Whipple before in the show.
Yeah.
The line here is 7.
I would take the over.
-15, -115 over, which is actually not bad. That's decent value. So yeah, I kind of like the over as well. I'm surprised by the preview content, how high people were on Pitt. And I like Pitt. I think they're giving Kenny Pickett a little too much credit. A little too much credit.
Right.
And
by the way, I love Caleb Ellaby for Western Michigan.
Your boy.
He's real fun.
But 7 feels attainable to me. So I kind of like where,
yeah, I'll take the
where that falls. Okay, the team's
defense and quarterback competence with a not crazy schedule is a good place to be.
In the ACC, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Okay, where are we going next?
Let's go to UVA.
Would love to.
Our boy Bronco Mendenhall.
I have no idea what to think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what's the appeal here?
Brennan Armstrong's playmaker. The appeal of them as a program is they're sort of unpredictable as to who shows up this week.
which makes it hard to really pin down the appeal aspect.
If you remember, Bryce Perkins was very entertaining as he led this team to the conference championship game 2 years ago. I think they ended up in the Orange Bowl. They're not fully bad on either side. They're a tough out. They are sort of nestled in that sort of competence range within the conference. Virginia is. So I guess that's the appeal. Look, they at one point last year, they lost four in a row, but they did lose Brennan Armstrong to injury, I believe, in the North Carolina State game. They ran the ball pretty well, but they couldn't throw it with any sort of consistency. Defense was in a pretty bad place last year, though they got good play from their linebackers. They just gave up a ton through the air. I don't know how many quarterbacks there are that can take advantage. By the way, thematically within the ACC this year, and maybe it's just the maybe this is where Roastal comes in, Ty, is we are talking about one of the most incredible collections of poor pass defenses within a division in the country, with Georgia Tech and Duke and Virginia. A lot of these teams were like 112th in certain terms of explosive pass defense. Yeah. There was, I think, like four or five of these teams were sub 100.
Yeah.
So you'll see, like, this is a very good cardio conference for receivers and players in the secondary. A lot of exercise happening, or at least last year there was. The road slate for Virginia this year, by the way, is quite tricky. It's at North Carolina, at Miami, at Louisville, at BYU, at Pitt, which is a letdown look-ahead game between Notre Dame at home and Virginia Tech at home, I believe. Yeah, that's it to near the end of the year. But they get Notre Dame a week after Notre Dame has Navy, for whatever that's worth, Ty.
Whatever that's worth.
And Virginia does have, like you mentioned the last episode, Virginia has a bye before Notre Dame. So situationally advantageous. I just don't feel great about Virginia against Notre Dame otherwise. So I don't know. Their ceiling is competence in a sea of drowning divisional opponents. There's some interesting pieces on offense. I don't see an offense with killers on the roster, especially Lavelle Davis, tight end, is injured. Could be for the year. He got hurt in the spring. I think a lot will depend on the secondary getting way, way better very quickly. Otherwise, you're just going to, like, they're going to win three in a row, lose five in a row, and split. You know, it's just, I don't think they're doing anything consistently impressive.
Okay.
But not crazy unimpressive at the same time. Yeah.
Okay,
just a rowboat team.
Rowboat team. What's our tally here?
I think we just have Duke left. I think.
Yeah.
Did I forget anybody else? Duke's going to be pretty bad.
This is a question that we had come up a couple times. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of Duke people that listen to the show, but we've heard it time and again. Is should we just bail on Cutcliffe at this point? Has it run its course? Is it time to move on? Mindful of the fact that Duke is still kind of a basketball school. There's not an overwhelmingly crazy amount of investment into the football program. It is what it is.
Right.
But is it time to move on past Cutcliffe? Or is he still the best you're going to do at a school like Duke?
The current iteration of David Cutcliffe probably is not the best Duke is going to do, but finding somebody to be better definitively is going to be very tricky. It's a tougher place to win, just in terms of dedication to football and who they play, and it's a basketball school, and so branding wise it might be tough to attract guys. But like, they attracted Mateo Durant, who is an all ACC caliber running back, who was a crazy bright spot last year. Chase Bryce was that nightmare. Like, he threw 15 picks. He fumbled the ball away six times. Like, Duke was historically inefficient in terms of holding onto the ball. They turned the ball over a ton. They developed really nice, and they've developed just in the past couple years, few years, really nice defensive linemen, but they lost their two best dudes there. Defensively, they can be interesting, but what are you supposed to do if the offense keeps giving the ball away?
Yeah,
the offense will not give the ball away as much as they did last year. But what is there to be excited about on offense? So, like, you know, people say the quarterbacks are athletic on the depth chart or whatever. Like, okay, but are they good? No. Can they not turn the ball over? Can they throw the ball downfield consistently? So I don't know. Giving up play calling duties is one thing. Duke just seems like a down program, and there doesn't seem to be big reason to feel like they can put it all together. I hope that they can run the ball, because Mateo Durant is legitimately fun to watch. I went back and watched some Duke football, and he's great. He's really good. But otherwise, no, there's not much to feel good about.
That's a
schedule wise. I mean, they laid the wood against Charlotte last year, and they open up with Will Healy and the 49ers. They get Northwestern, and that's sort of fun academic. You know, who maybe Northwestern has another historically bad offense this year, and that helps. They get Kansas. That should be winnable. But now Kansas has an actual competent coach, so who knows what they look like in week four. Probably not great. But to me, the home road splits don't matter all that much. They have Miami at home.
Right.
I don't know. Pitt at home. But, not, you know, I don't know. It doesn't seem like anything.
What was that sound you just made, by the way? I heard... Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my shrug fart.
Okay.
I wish there was more to give you.
So I think we both agree. Unless something catastrophic happens, i.e. DJU goes down and Clemson has to run a Wildcat, a Dennis Dorth cut
keep
offense.
Listing, itemizing things. Yeah.
Barring catastrophe, Clemson is far and away.
Oh, yeah, there you're comparing them to Duke or something. Yeah.
No. Come on.
Yeah.
Clemson's a team to beat.
Yes.
We agree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Who do you have as second? I mean, I'm not counting Notre Dame. They can't play in the conference championship.
No.
Who do you have coming out? Who do you have from afar-ish?
I like Miami.
Okay.
I think Miami's my team this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
in on Miami. I am intrigued by, again, that middle tier two, the teams fighting to get into tier two of the ACC. That's the storyline for me out of that whole conference. Not Clemson. I'm very interested in Clemson. Have to be.
Right.
It's the next rung down. And that pecking order, however teams define themselves this season, be very interesting to me. Because I can make a case for a bunch of them. You know, I did on the last show. So I'm very curious there. I think Miami is my team out of the Coastal.
Okay.
I could be talked into Carolina.
The pieces are on that defense.
They're there. I'm a little worried about the fact that I know a lot of talent's walking out the door for Carolina.
Yeah.
And I know that doesn't mean everything, but that's sort of where my head's at.
Look, if you're going to come back to Jalen Knight in Miami, Cameron Harris back... quarterback and defense. I think that's my pick as well.
All right.
But damn that schedule.
Tough. All right.
Yeah.
Let's
go talk American football.
Let's go to the American. I have in front of me Memphis, Navy, SMU, Tulane, Houston, and Tulsa.
Former West.
Where do you want me to start?
With my Tulsa Golden Hurricane, obviously.
Tulsa Golden Hurricanes, right?
Just Hurricane.
Hurricane, excuse me.
Yes.
Tulsa was 6-3 last year, but 6-0 in conference. A really good campaign. Actually, no, I want to play this. Where's it at?
Please.
Dom, what do you remember about your father?
What do you remember about your father, Dan?
He's around. I don't know. I remember he's a good guy, and I'll call him later.
2020 was a really good campaign. They almost won the American. Almost stole it away from Cincinnati. They were led by mostly a very sound defense that was 23rd nationally in terms of the SP+. So it was good defense, like I said before, not gimmicky, just really good. They ran a 3-3-5. It was solid.
I would say it was more than solid. That's very good. Really good.
It was very good. Yeah. It was a competitive advantage in the American Athletic Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Offense was okay, but defense is where it was at.
Yeah.
For these guys. The appeal this year...
I'm one of those boys that appreciates a fine body regardless of the make.
They didn't play 3 out of 5 weeks to begin the season.
No, they didn't.
Like an odd... I mean, everybody had odd years, but especially one of the teams that just, you know...
We'll talk about Houston.
Weird circumstances.
We'll talk about Houston momentarily. They're in the same boat.
Yeah, another one of those.
But most of the team is back for Tulsa this year. They do lose your boy... Zaven Collins, who was an unquestioned leader from the linebacker spot on that defense. But, you know, elsewhere, even though offense isn't where our eyes are trained in looking at this Tulsa team, given what they did last year, really talented group of wideouts. It's pretty deep. Mm-hmm. They've got a solid offensive line coming back that should help move the offense forward. The lingering question is whether the offense can keep pace with the defense.
Right.
The defense was so good last year. The offense, if they, again, it's like marginal improvement. And we're talking about a much, much different conversation here. In terms of traffic, the road ahead,
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
This is a team that has to go to Oklahoma State, to Ohio State, and to Cincinnati. And despite all that, they still have the 61st most difficult schedule in college football, which tells me that the rest of it's not bad.
Right.
Those are three losses. They're going to lose those three games, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they went toe-to-toe with Cincy, I still think those are three losses. The over-under here is 6.5 for Tulsa. I think that's the right number. I wouldn't want to bet the over. I would not want to bet the over here. So I like Tulsa. I feel good about what we saw last season, but there's too many questions for me, frankly, to go over 6.5 to get the 7, especially with that schedule. You know, those three big guns that I think are losses.
Sure.
Then you're talking about 9 other games. You got to win the overwhelming majority of them to get over 6.5. So I'm just playing numbers. I'm playing logic here, and I'm saying I don't like the over.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they can't get there, but I just, from a betting standpoint, no way would I put money on that.
Okay. Fair enough.
I like Tulsa. I like the job that they did.
I like your reasoning.
And I like the defense. I really do. It does hurt to lose our boy Zaven, though. He was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where I'm at on Tulsa.
Who do you want to go to next?
I was going
to
say Houston, gears. Just because I talked about Houston.
Yeah.
But Houston's another one. Houston didn't start playing until October the 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, it was a bunch of games getting postponed or canceled. They finished 3-3 in conference, 3-5 overall. The appeal is Clayton Toon, Tiny Toon Adventures. The appeal is Dana Holgorsen now having full control of the system. It's been a rocky kind of like 2-year stretch here because of circumstances.
Right.
But outside of Clayton Toon, there are 8 other guys back from last year. So you combine that with a good defensive line, especially off the edges. You combine, I think, the defense that should hopefully build on last year's success in generating pressure. This should be a good campaign. Houston right. isn't a spot where you ask, what's the over-under? There's a reason the over-under is 8. And I think there's a lot to like there. The schedule is very workable. Extremely workable. 121st in the nation in terms of strength of schedule. They open with a neutral sider, quote unquote neutral sider, that they play in Houston at the NERG.
Yes.
Again, it's a Texas kickoff game. They play Texas Tech.
Right.
They could beat Texas Tech in that game.
Mm-hmm.
They could beat Tech. They also don't have to play either Cincinnati or UCF in conference.
Good place to be.
There's a lot there. I'm really bullish on this team. I'm really bullish on Houston. Like I said, could see him beating Tech, going on a bit of a run because mm-hmm. of talent, returning because of schedule. I go over eight for Houston.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, it's been disappointing thus far, but been weird, rocky. I mean, Holgo has not looked good in terms of optics
literally,
with Houston thus far.
Literally yeah. has not looked
well,
good.
Well, he has not looked good in some time, but continue. Yeah.
So right. I'm very bullish on Houston this year.
I like that you've planted a flag. Where are we going next?
Let's go to Tulane. Green Wave.
I'm wearing a Tulane shirt as we speak.
That's why I'm doing it.
Continue. It's a delightful shade of blue.
6-6 overall last year, 3-5 in conference. Fairly solid across the board. Gave up a ton of big plays. Comical amount of big plays last year. They were efficient with the passing game and efficient against the passing game.
Okay.
Actually, let me rephrase
point.
That. I think I screwed that up.
I'm looking forward to it.
I worded this very awkwardly on my note sheet.
Okay.
Their Achilles heel was
Oh.
The passing game.
The exact opposite of what you said.
I said the exact opposite. I worded this so weirdly. Here's what this says in my note sheet. Efficiency with and against the pass was Achilles' heel.
That's
so I don't know
English.
How I misconstrued that, but they weren't good against the pass. How about that? Let's just say they weren't good against
the pass. That's easier. Yep.
At least on offense, part of that stemmed from the fact that they couldn't protect their quarterback. You can't protect your quarterback. Right. You're just not going to be efficient.
Right.
It hurts. So that's where they were at in 2020. The appeal this year, Michael Pratt is back. He took over for quarterback last year. He had a promising campaign as a freshman, only three games into the season, nine quarters to be exact into the season. So he's your guy. Tyjae Spears blew out his knee. After a good start, he's going to be back.
Your guy's their coordinator, right? Their offensive coordinator is Chip Long.
Chip Long's the new coordinator. Yeah.
Yeah. Will Hall is Southern Miss now. Yeah.
Will Hall is Southern Miss.
He was highly regarded. Yeah.
And Will Hall and Chip Long had they're friends. They know each other really well. And so there is some, I think, speculation that because of that relationship, the philosophies will be closely aligned enough that there won't be too big of a transition.
Fair enough.
I would say that's mostly BS because every time you've got a new coordinator, there's a transition.
True.
Can they minimize it? Sure. I'm not a huge Chip Long fan. I'll be honest with you. He did some good things at Notre Dame in general.
They were in the red zone.
I'm not a great supporter of Chip Long's, but.
Okay.
But I understand the logic here.
They need to improve.
They need to improve. The wide receivers that Michael Pratt was comfortable with are back. As is the entire left side of the line. So they're building with something here on the
people like Pratt,
offense.
Right?
People like Michael Pratt.
He's pretty good. Needs to be more accurate, it seems.
Two new coordinators, not just Chip Long. They've also got Chris Hampton on the defensive side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, they lose Cam Sample and Patrick Johnson from their line. Both go to the NFL.
Man, Patrick Johnson was so good for so long.
Yeah. So it's good linebacking core. The secondary has returning talent. It's still kind of but... How you replace that level of talent along the defensive line? Two guys in the league. That's not easy to do.
Yeah.
And
they
schedule.
They have a ton of big plays, too.
The schedule is freaking brutal. I mean, we talk about Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this. If you're Tulane.
I'm bringing it up right now. Yep.
They open against Oklahoma. They have to go on the road against Ole Miss 2 weeks later.
Spencer Rattler, Matt Corral, two NFL quarterbacks early. Okay,
against a secondary. I think the best that the best that you can say about their conference schedule is that they get Cincy at home.
I mean, they have whole Nailers right after that too.
I'm shrugging.
First 5 weeks,
They don't they don't really miss anybody in their conference schedule. So it's the best of the American, also including Oklahoma, also including Matt Corral.
Woof.
They're going to get drilled.
Buzz, your girlfriend.
They're going to get drilled.
Yeah.
The over-under is 5. I would never take the 5.
So you're talking Morgan State. I mean, UAB is a good program. I have not gone deep with them. Morgan State, ECU, maybe SMU, and USF. Yeah, that's 4 that are at least like immediately I can have a conversation around. Yeah.
Nobody listening to this, unless you're really high. Unless you're really high on Tulane, no one's going to bet the over here.
That's tough.
No one's going to bet the over.
But a good quarterback, promising coordinator. I mean, let's go through it like this, though. How many of these defenses are you legitimately scared of? You're not scared of Ole Miss.
None of them.
You're not scared of ECU. You're not scared of Houston, probably. You're not scared of SMU. You're not scared of UCF. You're not scared of USF. You're not scared of Memphis. Like, that's at least a good thing if you like Michael Pratt and Chip Long together.
I like Michael Pratt. He's still very young.
Yeah.
He's still very young. He has to clean up his game. The completion percentage was lower. He threw something like 11 picks. I don't have it in front of me, but it's like 11 picks. I think I saw.
Was it that many? Oh, okay.
So, I mean, he's good. He's a talent.
Right.
And I think this will give him another opportunity to develop, but the schedule's brutal. And
8 picks. What is it? 20 touchdowns, 8 picks. That's not awful.
If you take a super optimistic view of this team, the best you can do is 7-5. So I would never take over 5, but
fair enough. I'm good with that.
There are pieces here that you could feel really excited about moving forward. So I'm okay with that.
All right. A lot of shorter passing, not a downfield attack. Yeah.
Let's go to SMU. SMU.
SMU.
Yep. 7-3.
Shane Bichelle finally gone?
Shane Bichelle finally gone. Shaggy Shane's gone.
Woo!
And who takes over for him is interesting.
Okay.
So it depends where you look. Tanner Mordecai, you remember that name from Oklahoma? Very lightly used. He backed up both Jalen Hurts and recently Spencer Rattler. He's transferring.
I think maybe consecutive years of don't sleep on Tanner Mordecai.
Exactly.
And Oklahoma slept on Tanner Mordecai.
Exactly. To the extent that now he's playing for SMU.
Yeah.
It could be Tanner Mordecai. It also could be Preston Stone. Preston Stone's a four-star. He's a local kid from Dallas that had offers. He had offers from Alabama. Like every big program wanted Preston Stone. He wanted to stay close to home, so he took SMU. A hell of a big fish to reel in if you're...
I read that as his girlfriend goes to SMU.
I mean...
Maybe. I don't know.
It was a nice fish to reel in if you are Sonny Dykes, right?
Totally.
So he's got a good problem. He's got two quarterbacks that I think everybody's excited about. I think it'll be Tanner Mordecai. I don't know. But I think it's probably going to be Tanner Mordecai.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see how they piece this offense together because there's skill position that's back. Ulysses Bentley IV, my favorite name in college football.
Yeah.
Had an incredible freshman campaign. Reggie Roberson hopefully will now be healthy. They're loaded at the skill position, Dan. And plus the line brings everybody
as they
back.
Should be.
The line
if
brings
you're a
everybody
skill
back.
Dude, yeah, especially receiver. Why wouldn't you go play in that offense?
No, it's an excitable offense. Mm-hmm. The line is back. If you look at what they did last year, the games that they won, they deserve to win. The ones that they lost, they really deserve not to win. They got drilled.
Yes. I mean, that ECU. Whoa.
You know, and so now we're coming from a place where Shane Bichelle was there forever. It was a good freshman campaign for Ulysses Bentley IV.
Mm-hmm.
A bummer that we didn't get to see a full season of Reggie Roberson because he had a knee injury. His season was cut short. But now they bring 18 guys back. And so you're looking at this and you're saying, well, they're loaded on offense. The line's back. The defense was kind of the question, but they're bringing over Jim Leavitt, your boy Jim Leavitt.
Should immediately improve defenses wherever he goes. He has a track record of doing so.
He's like a close personal friend of Sonny Dykes. Mm-hmm. He steps in. He has that track record. You know, I would think
they
a step
just brought
forward.
In ISM, the one of Oregon's starting inside linebackers, transferred to SMU. Slade Matutia.
I would think a step forward there.
Yeah.
I would think a step forward. The schedule is not bad. It's not great. Okay. It's not bad. They do play TCU on the road earlier in the year at the end of September. They have a brutal stretch, Dan, from Halloween weekend through, I guess it'd be the week before Thanksgiving, where they're at Houston, at Memphis, UCF, and at Cincinnati.
And then?
What's
Tulsa.
And then Tulsa.
And then Tulsa right after that.
And then Tulsa. But I'm not even counting Tulsa there.
Okay.
So it's not a great way to close out, but they can do a lot of damage before they get there. Vegas is the over-under at 6, which folks are hitting the over pretty hard here. I think I agree.
I can see it.
6 is really low. Really low. SMU is a program.
I see 7 or 8, but like that's not that high above 6.
This is a program to me that feels like it's got some good momentum going into this season.
Okay.
The question is the quarterback position, right? That's in the system that Sonny Dykes runs. You need a good quarterback.
But also, when you have somebody who has the track record at quarterback that Sonny Dykes has,
you feel
a little less
that.
Worrisome.
You feel
in
better
the system,
about that.
Right? Like somebody's going to develop nicely.
I would go over that 6. 6 feels really low to me. I mentioned Memphis. Memphis had a really good first year under Ryan Silverfield. So keep in mind, Mike Norvell left. Ryan Silverfield took over. 1-8-3. It was the 7th straight year of at least 8 wins for Memphis. So they're building something there. The offense was solid. It was 45 spots worse in the SP Plus than in 2019. So it took a step back.
Sure.
And also the defense was marginally worse than in 2019. Brady White was again there for what felt like forever.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Again, superb. A very good quarterback at the college level. But now he's not. Now he's not. And so that's where we start, I think, the conversation now as we look forward. You know, let's just play it again.
I'm one of those boys that appreciates a fine body regardless of the make.
Fine body regardless of the make. So Grant Gunnell is your incoming transfer from Arizona.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Grant Gunnell was as big as he is.
He's huge.
He's 6'6", 228, a tall glass of water.
Yeah, he was promising his first season at Arizona, but was sort of involved in the mess that was last year. He was, at one point, I want to say very early on in his recruiting year, may have been a five-star type kid. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a down year or just more evaluation, didn't end up there, but certainly had a lot of big program interest during his recruitment.
And then on the flip side, someone else who, so I think it's going to be Grant Gunnell at quarterback, but I don't know that for sure. They also bring in Peter Parrish. Great name.
Okay.
Smaller guy, 6'1", 190, who comes over from LSU.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which direction they go. I think it's going to be Grant Gunnell, but I don't know.
Probably.
It's going to be one of those two guys. I think there's upside with both. I love that they still have Calvin Austin III mm-hmm. on the offense, a dynamic wideout, went over 1,000 receiving last year. They got pieces, and I think Ryan Silverfield's good enough to piece those together. The defense, I would think, would improve in year two under Mike McIntyre. We both like Mike McIntyre. We loved him with what he did, at least initially, at Colorado. And he is a guy who has a track record for building out defense, getting the most out of defense.
Good safety. There's somebody in their secondary. I just read the other day.
Quindell Johnson.
Quindell Johnson, yeah.
Quindell Johnson anchors the back half of that defense. So he's got pieces to work with. The linebacking core is really strong.
Okay.
Probably the best in the American. And then you stack on top Quindell Johnson. Yeah. I think you're going to see a big improvement over last year's numbers. The schedule's favorable too. I was going to say
the only thing with last year is they won games, but they appeared to be like one of those teams. Like what are they exactly? Like
yeah,
what
it was,
do they do?
It was
what are they
hard
hanging
to
their
say.
Hat on? Yeah.
It was hard to say. And that was due to a variety of factors, but
what is it that you say you would do here?
yeah, exactly.
That's my butchering of an Office Space line. Yeah.
So I think I look at the returning talent. I don't know what happens at quarterback, but I know I like the talent elsewhere. I know that the schedule's favorable. They've got a home non-conference game against Mississippi State pretty early, but they miss Cincinnati in conference play. They do have to go to both UCF and Houston. Which
okay.
isn't easy.
No.
But, you know, the other thing that I should add here, and I don't want to bury the lead, they do have talent. The schedule is favorable. They kind of got killed in the transfer portal. They had guys, they had a lot of guys transfer out.
Never a good sign. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, you asked questions about why is that happening. Between the new starting quarterback, I still think like 8 wins.
You are high on a lot of these teams.
Yeah.
Are you high on Navy as well?
No, I'm not high on Navy at all.
Oh, okay. So that balances
things
out.
At all.
Okay.
I'm not high on Navy at all. But here's the thing with Navy, and I texted this to you last night. I've been doing this dynasty in old NCAA 14 on Twitch. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it in a couple months because I got a new super computer thingy here and I haven't hooked up. I know I'm a dork. I haven't hooked up all the stuff so that I could do the broadcasts again. But people have been asking, like, can you do the broadcast? I will do the broadcast soon. I promise.
Good.
I promise. It's all the same guys from my Navy dynasty.
So you are familiar with
in
names.
Real life. I am familiar with how I use the players.
Right.
And
so
not
you
necessarily
can criticize.
Not necessarily how they were used.
Right.
So that it's a very weird juxtaposition for me to analyze it on two levels. Navy was bad last year, Dan. Mm. They were really bad. They were 3-7.
They were who BYU absolutely demolished early on, right? Yeah. On the ground, by the
That's
way.
That's right. That's right. And Ken Niumatalolo says that two plays into that game, he knew that they were going to get killed. Took yeah, two I mean, plays like, for him to know.
That was a super early September. That wasn't August. That was a September game that everybody was like, what's going on with the season? It was
So here's the problem. Yeah. Navy couldn't run the option.
That's a big issue.
The fabric of their entire system is the option. They couldn't run the option. They're bad at it. And so it's, of course, antithetical to the entire operation. But at one point against SMU, I think it was SMU, they actually tried to open it up and start throwing the ball. Yeah. They couldn't do the option. It was just bad. The whole thing was bad. So I don't know. Was last year a blip? Was it the beginning of a trend?
They took November off. 3 weeks of no football in November. And they scored like nothing to finish out the year. Memphis Tulsa Army.
They couldn't run the option. That was a problem. They couldn't run the option.
Not good enough.
So I get it. I get it from that standpoint. I don't know if it's a blip. I don't know if it's the beginning of a trend. Obviously, if they can get back to doing what they've always done well, then it's a different conversation in 2021. And that's what we're root for. It's not an easy schedule, though. It's really not. The meat of their schedule is bookended by bye weeks. Right in the middle of the schedule, they're at Houston. They've got UCF. They've got SMU. They're at Memphis. They have Cincinnati. They're at Tulsa. They're at Notre Dame.
Even just starting the season with Marshall and Air Force, it's quality opponents. Yeah.
So
I mean, it's Marshall with the first-year coach, but yes.
Tough schedule, 42nd nationally in terms of strength of schedule. They're going to struggle to get to a bowl. I don't see bowl eligibility here. I'm not high on Navy at all. I root for Ken Niumatalolo.
Well, is there anything different between last year's team and what we're seeing this year? Like, is there like, oh, the whole offensive line was injured last year? Or like, oh, they brought in 11 guys in this, I was going to say recruiting class or transfer portal, but I imagine that's a very difficult place to transfer to halfway through your college career. Is there any real reason? Is it an injury thing? Is it a position switch thing? Is it a coach hire thing? Like, is there any, like, in the scrolls, the text that you've read, where is their optimism? That just like it was a blip year and Kenny Amatalo has a track record, but is there anything specific?
Yeah, the specifics around last year and why the bottom fell out a little bit was they didn't have a quarterback that they felt great about.
Right.
I think they had three quarterbacks start over the course of the year. They played five in total. And the whole thing was a shuffle, trying to figure out who can really anchor this option offense. They just never found that guy. So
that's tricky.
With the benefit of a year now to go back and look at tape and maybe get the team more on the same page, perhaps there'll be improvement. And especially an option offense, you need to really communicate well across the board. You don't communicate well, you guys are going to need help. and so it was tough. It was you run a system where perhaps even more than most, you need to make sure you're on the same page. And it was tough to get on the same page. The other thing that Ken Niumatalolo says is that he keep in mind where we were at as a college football society, whatever you want to call it, just a regular society last year. But around the time that these teams were trying to prepare, people didn't know what to make of COVID.
Yep.
Yeah, we were a couple months into it at that point.
Flying blind. Yep.
We're kind of flying blind. And Ken, and I think he rightly points out that he didn't want to be the guy that hung his players out to dry by doing full contact drills, by putting them in a bad situation. And so he didn't do contact. There was no live tackling.
In fall camp. Yeah.
Yeah. There was no live tackling at all to get ready for things.
Jeez. Yeah. I remember
that. And it's hard. You know, that makes it hard. So,
and it showed against BYU.
Yeah. Showed against BYU. It was really bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Ken Niumatalolo has been there forever. Mm-hmm. And he's been, I think, an incredibly successful coach for Navy. He's done a good job.
Of course.
He gets benefit of the doubt. He's one of those guys I'm willing to give a mulligan. I think it's better. It's hard to get too much better, though, with the schedule. Schedule's tough.
Yeah.
So they had three wins last year. There should be a full 12-game slate. Let me see what the over-under is here for Navy. Navy's at 3.5. I'll give them 4 just because I like Navy. I root for the Navy. But
I mean, there are some. Look, the Temple defense, the ECU defense. We'll see about Memphis. They were average. SMU's defense, UCF's defense. Like, they're, you know, Marshall's fielded good defenses lately. Air Force, we'll see. Yeah, it's tough to find. It really is. It's tough. Too bad.
Okay. I think that's it. Is there anybody that I left out? I think we
can talk UConn, even though they're no longer in the conference, but we'll save UConn.
We'll save UConn for later. Yeah, I think we got everybody in the last.
Yeah. All right. So now that we've gotten everybody in the American, if Cincinnati is the prohibitive favorite, or if they're not, what does the power structure look like? Who is after Cincinnati, if we can agree that they are the class of the conference?
Yeah, I think it's relatively straightforward in that it's Cincinnati and UCF. And then it's everybody else.
Okay.
And then it's everybody else.
It's not as cut and dry to me because of the combination of new head coach and staff and what they look like on defense last year in UCF.
Okay.
I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's Memphis. I mean, a lot depends on Grant Gunnell. I don't think it's UCF Memphis.
Sure. After UCF, I feel best about both Houston and SMU.
Okay.
That would be where I would go next with it.
I think that's fine. Yeah.
And then after that, like, you're talking Tulane, you're talking maybe Tulsa can go on a run. I like what Ryan Silverfield did last year. I think it was a good campaign. But
yeah,
the quarterback thing, to me, it's too many questions there.
Yeah.
To really invest too heavily in Memphis. I think they're pretty far down on the pecking order. So no, I guess
if you're comparing, you just, one of the teams is Dylan Gabriel. So let's go with them.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow. Okay. So we did it. Two really long shows here. We recorded both in the same day. And
yes,
my voice feels like I'm rubbing two sticks together at this point.
Yeah. I'm going to take a break from speaking about football things for at least a few minutes.
Why don't we take a break? We will be back next week, I believe. So this episode is going to feature on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday and Friday, it will be the Big Ten East and Big Ten West, right?
Correct.
I believe that's our schedule. And then as we go into the following week, we do SEC. As we go into the following week, we do Big 12. Go into the following week, we do Pac-12. And then we have a national preview that we're going to put together to kind of aggregate all this stuff.
Fantasy things thereafter, hopefully.
And there'll be
something.
Fantasy things. Yeah, so there's a lot to come. We are really just starting to ramp this thing up. But do go on out to solidverbal.com for more of the editorial stuff that we're posting. So we've already talked about what's going to drop on Friday, or on Fridays, I should say. You saw what dropped on this past Friday about getting back to normal from a college football standpoint. But we will have content that we are trying to push out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And
correct,
the content that should be out in tandem with either this show or the one that is to follow next Monday is more of an analytical look, more of a stats look. So we try to cover things from a couple different standpoints, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of what we do is tongue-in-cheek. Tongue-in-cheek stuff's going to be Friday. It's probably going to be every day, but mostly going to be on Fridays.
Yes.
We will also have a look at what should be your watch schedule looking forward and all throughout the season. So we're going to look at some of the big matchups that you should mark on your calendar, circle on your calendar for each of the conferences.
We'll make the window of opportunity official and in text.
Going to make it officially
print.
Official.
Yeah.
Officially official. That'll be on Wednesdays. And then on Mondays, it's going to be more of an analytical look, a stats deep dive as it were on what are some of the interesting factoids that mainly interest the Solid Verbal, mainly interest you as Solid Verbal listeners, but just interesting factoids as we get ready for the season. And then obviously as we go throughout the season that are of note.
Yeah.
And that's the plan.
And if you have any sort of major company that needs an IT guy, here's Ty.
Never.
He's
not
free
again.
Now.
Not again. No. Don't sign me up for that.
Woo!
How dare you?
But if you want to learn all about Ty's now former mysterious day job, verballers.com for a full episode dedicated to a detailed look at Ty's now former mysterious day job.
Dan, this is fun. We'll do it again soon, okay?
That's all I have, Ty.
Go drink some
tea. I haven't eaten today.
Me neither. For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we will be back soon talking all things Big Ten East. In the meantime, catch you in a few days. Stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim.
You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.